Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Sandra, can you hear me back here? Y'all hear me way back here? Thank you for the nice introduction. That's the $20 version. Walter and I are on the plane flying in, and I'm about halfway here, and I thought, oh my God, I forgot my phone. First, I thought I lost my phone. And then it's like, let's just say I forgot it. That's a lot easier that way. Surely it's in my truck with about 19 messages. I want to thank the committee for inviting us up here to speak. My wife, Terry, was going to come with me, and Walter's wife, Kay, was going to come with us. But Kay fell sick, and my wife is fallen sick also, so she couldn't come. They both give their best, and that's the story for the rent-a-car and, you know, thing coming up here. Plus, he said he had a pickup truck, and I was going to have to ride in the back if we had a bunch of folks. Man, it's nice here. We got here, and we went to the cement pond or whatever it is up there with the pumped-in water. Oh, that was nice. Went back to the room, fell asleep, woke up in a panic. I start my talk off with a little joke. I do that not for you, it's for me. And I also, to honor my sponsor, when he talks, he tells a story, a little joke to get going. And when I get to the punchline, I'm going to do like this. And y'all, please do that, and then we'll get this thing rolling. The setting of the joke's in a little town in East Texas. There's probably this many folks in the whole town. There's one church, and the deacon and the elders of the church, the deacon and the preachers were getting together, and they were talking about folks. I mean, about church things. And they got on the topic of the town liar. The guy was born there, been lying his whole life. And they got to thinking about him and said, you know what? He's a grown man now. We got to maybe break him of his line. The best thing we could probably do is tell him the most outlandish lie we could think of. And that ought to learn him a lesson. Give him some of his own medicine. They thought that was a good idea. Nobody said they'd go. They just kind of looked at each other. The preacher said, well, I'll go. Next day, the preacher went to the liar's house. Knocked on his door. Sure enough, the liar was home. Come to the door in a small town. You see it's a preacher. You invite him in. That's what he did. Come on in, preacher. Come back to the kitchen. I'll put coffee on and we'll visit. Well, they get going and he's putting coffee on. The preacher said, well, it's as good a time as any. He said, did you hear what happened last Wednesday at prayer meeting? Liar said, no, sir. Preacher went right into it. All of a sudden, cutting down the center aisle was a grizzly bear. Running full blast with a little bitty cur dog nipping at his heels. That cur dog run that grizzly bear all the way up behind the pulpit. And there was a bunch of growling, snapping, fur flying everywhere. All of a sudden, dead silence. That cur dog done killed that grizzly bear. Preacher looked at the liar and said, now, do you believe that? Liar looked him dead in the eye and said, yes, sir. That's my dog. My name's Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be sober today, and I'm grateful God showed me mercy instead of justice. You know, I told these guys when I got up here, I'm certainly not going to let the truth get in the way of a good story tonight, hence the joke. You know, I'm going to tell in a general way what happened. what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. It's real important that you know what happened and what's going on now. It's a long way from the weed patch to the old granddad. I guarantee that. And I still can't get my mind around how wonderful of a life I've got. And I know it's everything's been given to me as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was visiting with my mother. I guess I had 4 years sober, 3 or 4 years sober. And I was telling her, you know, it's hard to believe I've been on my own since I was 14 years old. And she stopped, reached across the table and touched me on the hand. She said, "You're my only son. You've been on your own since you was 13. You left home." And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time when I was 29. And I sobered up when I was 37, and I was a product of the streets. I brought my own self up, and thank God for the old-timers. And when all of y'all were standing up, I had a warm, fuzzy feeling, because it's good. The old-timers are good, except when they're sponsoring you. I'll call Walter up. That's Walter right over there. Stand up, Walter. That's my sponsor. I'm going to be real nice to him tonight. I'll call him up and I'll say, "Walter, I'm worried about whatever it is. You know, I'm worried about my job." That's what he'll tell me. And as soon as I call him up and say I'm worried, I'll realize I should have never called him up and said I was worried. Because it's a pat answer. He'll tell me this, "Mike, if you're in charge, you need to be worried." And then he follows up with this, "If God's in charge, you ain't got to worry in the world." And then we do what we do, which is pray about it and talk about it and move on. Get out of my head. The problem's in my head. Get away from between these ears and get in my heart where the solution lies. The book says our problem is in our mind. First thing I want to do is think about it. Well, let's see here. I was born in Louisiana. Don't hold that against me. That's right. We got one southerner over there. I wanted to say coonass, but I don't. But I got to Texas as quick as I could. I was raised in a little town called Pasadena. It's a suburb of Houston. Few of y'all might know where that's at. I would like to tell you I come from a broken home. That would explain a lot of things. But my folks are still married. They've been married 58 years in February. And he says the reason they've been together so long is she does what she wants to do, and he does what she wants to do, and they get along good. Oh, if we'd have had, if this talk would have been 10 or even 15 years ago, I'd tell you it was my father's fault. That's what I come here with. I've had to blame somebody. It certainly wasn't my fault. But now that I've looked at things and had a little bit of sobriety, I know it ain't nobody's fault. I got a disease and it's alcoholism. And gone untreated, my best case scenario, life in prison. That's my thinking. Anyway, come up in Pasadena. My first drink, I would say, was somewhere around 11. There wasn't no alcohol in my home. Let me back up just a little bit. And I'm going to warn you right now, I might get 9 or 10 stories going at one time. All right? But look here. I'll have us out of here in 60 minutes and it'll be all right. Alcoholic don't care how many stories you got going on, as long as you get out of here in 60 minutes. Now, where was I? Have I graduated from college yet? If I do, somebody needs to snatch me out from here. I ain't never been to college. I guess I was about 9 years old, and my mom, this was a scene at our house. I got an older sister and a younger sister. Me and my dad would go out on Saturday and cook food on the patio, you know, barbecue. And he'd drink. And mama and my sisters would sit inside and make salads and cakes and stuff. And then we'd all meet inside. They'd fight and we'd eat. One day it got out of hand and he hit her with a cake pan, busted her up. She loaded me and my sisters up and took us to a hotel. We came back the next day and I can remember my dad when we come through the door, he was mopping and cleaning up. It was a mess. And she told him, if you ever drink again, I'm going to load these children up and I ain't never coming home. And my dad stopped drinking. He's what the big book Alcoholics Anonymous describes as a hard drinker. He's the one that can quit with a warning from a wife. Maybe the judge threatens him or the doctor. He can stop or moderate. My dad's never drank again. So at 11, when I had my first drink, it didn't come from my home. A friend of mine's dad had a wet bar. And we were going to scout camp and we got a fruit jar. And we loaded it up with a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And we took it to scout camp. Well, I don't remember anybody else drinking, but I know Mike drank. And I'll be quite honest with you. It didn't have to be a fruit jar full of alcohol. It could have been anything. I just wanted to fit in. I wanted to be a part of. I've always had the feeling that I didn't quite fit in. I hear that a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. I made up a word for it. You ain't going to find it in a big book. I call it oddballism. Plum ate up with it. Always felt like I was an apple in an orange crate. Now, I'll tell you another thing. I brought it right in here to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not one of those that got here and thought, whew, I'm home. That's just not my case. I come here kicking and screaming. Took me a long time to get sober. A long time. And it took me a long time after I'd physically sobered up to start behaving myself. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Not one time did y'all ever tell me, Mike, you leave and don't come back. Now, there's a few groups that were glad that I relocated to other parts of town. Anyway, I took that fruit jar and had me some drinks, and I don't think I drank alcoholically from then. I was 11 years old. Went to reform school at 13. Oh, he thinks that's funny, don't he? Wasn't funny then when I was 13, I tell you. Penitentiary at 17. Got out when I was 20 years old. Call that my college time. You know, I went to one meeting down there in the Ferguson unit in Texas. And it was a condition of parole. And I remember going down there. I was just a boy. I went to the penitentiary at 17. I wasn't even old enough to drink. And here they brought me up for parole and said, you can't get out because you're alcoholic. You got to go to AA meetings. And I looked at them like they had a chicken on their head. I'm not even old enough to drink. I was in complete denial. How could I be an alcoholic? I looked back at Bill's story, his ominous warning when he was overseas. Looked at that doggerel. Talked about that fella that died by pot. Ain't talking about smoking no weed either. Drank himself to death. He had a moment of clarity. And I would like to think that I might have had a moment of clarity. I don't know. I went to one meeting down there. Next time I come up for parole, I told them, old Mike ain't going to no AA meetings. I'll do my time day per day. And they obliged me. Well, I got out of there. And there's a friend of mine. He's dead and gone now, Waterfront Joe. And he used to say he started out a wino and ended up an NEO. Well, I started out a NEO and ended up a wino. Well, I got out to the joint and I went home to Mom and Dad. They were living in Shreveport, Louisiana at the time, Bossier City. They had moved from Pasadena. They didn't want my younger sister to end up like me. And I went over there and went to work in a gas station for about 2 weeks, and I robbed it and went back to Houston. I didn't actually rob it. I just took all the money and left. Don't even try it. Statute of limitations is over. So don't even try it. You know, and at that time I was doing anything. I was doing drugs, alcohol, whatever. And I got to thinking, probably that dang old dope. So I just stopped doing dope. Just drank. And you know what? I didn't notice no big difference. I would tell you if there was a difference because y'all need to know that. But I don't remember no difference. You're not going to hear about no DWI. Of course, I didn't own a car till I was 35 years old. Y'all give me my first car. You loaned it to me. Old boy loaned it to me at a detox. I give it back to him 3 years later. He said, give me them keys. I ain't never loaning my car to nobody ever again. I was on a motorcycle. I was probably in my mid-20s. I don't know if it was my motorcycle, but I was driving it. Now, I'm coming through Houston, and it's late at night, and it's raining. And I don't know if I'm going someplace or coming back from someplace. That's how drunk I was. And if any of you have been to Houston, you know there's an elevated that goes through the center of Houston. And that's where I was at. And it was late. Started raining real bad. So I come down off the elevated into a little bitty area of Houston called the Montrose. A culture area. Pulled into a little cafe and ordered me some breakfast. Well, I took a bite of my eggs and they were cold. And I look around, it's just me and the cook. And I say, hey, my eggs are cold. He said, well, they ought to be. You've been laying in them for 2 hours. Just typical Mike drunk. Apparently, I come rolling in off that overpass, drunk, wet, and angry. I was always angry. I was 10 years sober before I started getting unangry. And anybody that had any sense left, and I must have ordered my food, fell in it, come back up, egg all stuck to my head, gonna take a bite. Of course, it's not my fault, it's the cook's fault. And I threw the plate at him, cussed him out, and got on out of there. You know, I could drag us through the mud on some real tragic stuff, too. You're not going to hear about any families or any careers or anything like that, because I don't have any family. I don't have any career. I went without an address for about 17 years. So, I'm not going to drag you through the mud. Let's get me sober. That's pretty exciting in itself. You know, here's the scene. 1986. I just got out of county jail for aggravated assault on my first wife. Here's what happened. We got married. She was a friend of mine's, a co-worker's sister who had a home. All right. You're with me on that. And we got married and I guess we were married somewhere. I want to put a time limit, maybe 6 to 8 months. But we didn't live together for maybe 6 or 8 weeks. I was a running drunk. I would sober up there. And I was desperately trying to get normal, to fit in, to be like everybody else, in a sense. And one day I come home off of a 1 week, 2 week, 3 week drunk, I don't remember. Middle of the night, pulled her out of bed and beat her up real bad. Thank God she called the law on me. And the law is what introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'd forgotten about the Ferguson unit, that one meeting I went to. I was sober 10 years before I realized, I went to a meeting in the joint. I got down there on aggravated assault charge in Houston County Jail. And it was a woman DA. And she pulled out my record. And there was a whole bunch of jail time between when I got out the joint and when I jumped on Cindy. A bunch of vagrancy, drunk in public, pallet theft. Got any pallet thieves out there? There's one. That's right. Old 4840, that's a code name. You can get $2 for one of them. Here's what you do. You steal a truck, and then you go steal some pallets and sell them. One time I was getting locked down for misdemeanor theft. It involved pallets. And the cop at downtown Houston was fingerprinting me. And it was late at night. And he was caressing my hand. And this is what he told me. He said, you know, I fingerprint for a living. Been a long time since I felt a glove like that on a man. I'd been stealing them pallets living on the street. I had a thick glove on. Anyway, it didn't shorten my sentence or nothing, but... I hadn't got out of college yet, have I? I'm going to go there. Okay. The DA said I was alcoholic. She looked at my record and said, Mike, you got an alcohol problem. I said, well, okay. By this time, I didn't want out of jail. I can't tell you how many times I went to jail thinking, okay, I'm going to do things different. When I get out, I'm going to get me a job. I'm going to get me a room down at the mission. Or maybe at the Y. I'll try to get me some kind of vehicle and get some kind of life. And most of the time when I got out of Reasoner, that's the city jail in Houston, I'd be drunk within a block. I knew everybody there. Everybody, all the winos hanging out around the jailhouse, we knew each other. And this time I was in for something real serious, aggravated assault. And I did it when I was drunk, and I didn't remember much of it. It's one of them crimes where you just don't remember what happened, but you know something real bad happened. And thank God for that woman, DA. She identified my alcoholism. And they gave me 10 years aggravated assault probation. You don't do that with an ex-con. I look back now, it's the loving hand of God in my life. And in the book, it talks about how the different times we have tried to stop drinking. You know, never on the job, off the job, take a trip, don't take a trip, swap from beer to wine. Well, one of my times was lengthy probation. I thought for sure, with these folks watching me, I'd be good. Well, that didn't work. I didn't get locked back down, but here's the scene. I get out of jail on a probation, 10 years probation, and I go back with Cindy. But this time, Cindy don't have a home. You live with me for any amount of time, you ain't got nothing. What you do is throw your stuff in a little sack. And that's what she did, and her son moved in with her mother in the Spring Branch area of Houston. Two-bedroom apartment. Here's the scene. Her mother, her grandmother, her sister, Cindy, her son, and Bubba. Bubba did a shot of dope too big, and he'd look at you like this. Had a real long beard, looked like a coon might pop out at any time. Well, I get out of jail, and I go back and live with them. We're all in a two-bedroom apartment. And they told me you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to one meeting. It was called Hugs, Not Drugs. And then people tried to touch me, and I went off on them. No more meetings. We're not going back to that. Bunch of weirdos. So I'm staying there with the whole family in a two-bedroom apartment, and I'm not drinking. Seems like everybody else is, though. especially Bubba. A couple of months went by and I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I'll put it in regular terms, I was crazy as hell. Me and her get to fighting in the back room and I get her in a chokehold in the closet. Thank God I let her go, had a moment of clarity. She's screaming. And I leave there and go off into the living room and everybody's home. And they're all behind Mama in the corner doing this. She's back there screaming. And if I had one person to call, one place to go, I would have gone. I didn't have a friend left. Not a one friend left. Not a one phone call. Nobody wanted to be around me as a time bomb. I'd jump on you sober or drunk. Didn't matter to me. I was hearing things by this time. What I didn't know was Mama had started going to Al-Anon when I married her daughter. So here's the scene. She's back there screaming bloody murder. The whole family's home and they're behind Mama doing this. And I come out in the living room and this is what Mama said. She said, "Mike, there's an AA meeting right across the street." I did like this. That meant no more talking. Well, Al-Anon screwed that up. And she tricked me. This is what she said. "I believe they're playing dominoes over there." Well, see, that gave me an out. She could have told me they're hula hooping in the parking lot. I needed a place to go. So I went over there right across the street. She's right. The Spring Branch Club was right across the street. I went over there and they wasn't playing dominoes. You know how God works. I challenge anybody to look back. I know you have. If you've been here for any amount of time, you've looked back at the loving hand of God. He was working in my life then. He's working in my life when that female DA. I got in there, and the meeting was just fixing to start. And I kind of was in between everybody, and I didn't have enough to say. Everybody was just kind of shuffling into the meeting hall. You know how they do. They wait for the last minute, and woo. Well, I didn't have the social skills to say, "Oh, I don't think I want to go to this meeting," and leave. I just didn't. I didn't have that. I had no, only social skill I had was this. "I will hit you upside your head." That was my social. Do whatever you want with that. I brought it into Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to get into that. You got to hear what happened. But I had no social. I didn't know what to say. I just went in with them and ended up in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at the Spring Branch Club. And this is how I heard the message. Big meeting hall. And I sat against the wall, make sure nobody's looking at me. But of course nobody's looking at me. My back's against the wall. And I'm not paying attention to nothing. And they do it wrong over there. They got a chairman and a leader. And I go back to a men's meeting there today and I tell them, "Y'all are doing it wrong." You know what they tell me? "Mike, would you please sit down and shut up?" I hear that a lot. No. So I get to the meeting and there's two bull males running the meeting. One of them's got a big old cowboy hat. And I ain't paying attention to them. I'm making sure nobody's looking at me. About halfway through the meeting, the chairman, the voice changed of the chairman. He said, "Excuse me a minute," to the person talking. And he turned real quick and he said, "You two, holding a conversation. If you want to talk, get outside. We're trying to have an AA meeting." And that got my attention. I thought maybe there was going to be some fighting going on or something in there. A little bit of violence got me. Well, I was there the next day. You know, I picked up my first desire chip there. And I'd like to tell you I stayed sober from that day on, but I didn't. I got a whole list of sobriety dates in my big book. I bring it along with me. Oh, I'm not going to read it or nothing like that, but it does look good, doesn't it? Like I got it on. Walter said it. I need to knock the dust off of it once in a while and at least open it. But I've got a list of sobriety dates in the back. And those aren't by no means all my sobriety dates, but there's about 10 or 12 of them, and I won't bore you with it. Let me tell you what happened. I picked up a desire chip at the Spring Branch Club, And let's review real quick. I was living with Cindy and her whole family in a 2-bedroom apartment. And I hadn't drank in a couple of months, but I was crazy. 3 years later, when I got to the wheelhouse in 89, I could not go without a drink. If I went without a drink, I would start hallucinating, and I would go into what I call the flaming put-me-outs. I would catch on fire and start putting myself out. Now, that's a little comical now. One of the detoxes was the Northside 24-Hour Club. And I detoxed there, and I didn't stay sober. And they wouldn't let you come back through. But I was living in a weed patch next door because I knew the houseman that had sobered up there. And he was feeding me food once in a while, was giving me money for wine. And he was telling me, Mike, please don't leave. Well, if 6 months of this went by or so, and I come back over there late one night and I didn't have no wine, I'd run out. And I caught on fire. And I put myself out in that Shell parking lot, and it was bad. It got real bad. I was all cut up, banged up. And they come out there and got me and drug me in there and started feeding me honey. 7 o'clock the next morning, as soon as the liquor store opened where I could go down and get some wine, you know, it wasn't that bad. Just a few cuts. They'll heal up. Let's jump up to 94. My sober date is January the 30th of 1994. I've been sober every day since then. I base that on my sobriety and the good life that I have on the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsorship, and a loving God, and a lot of good old-timers that have just cut some tremendous slack. You know, I picked up my last desire chip at the Legacy Club in Pasadena. Was going with a gal named Sonia. I called her Junior. Junior had an apartment. So old Mike had an apartment. 6 months went by. Went through the steps. Went back through the steps. Just like I'd done all the times before. There's not a one time I picked up a desire chip thinking, I'm going to fool Alcoholics Anonymous. I really meant it. I really wanted to stay sober. The truth, the hard truth is, I wasn't through drinking. I never liked to hear that. My old timer tell you that. Well, boy, you just ain't had enough. But you don't understand. No, the truth was, I just hadn't had enough. 6 months went by, I'm sober, worked the steps, playing baseball for the Legacy Club. Slipped and broke my arm playing second base. That wasn't my fault, it was their fault. They should have told me the grass was wet. But anyway. Sponsor went to have surgery where they take a little vein out of his leg and put it in his heart, and he died on the emergency room, and where they were cutting him, died. I got a broke arm. Got a 6-month chip in my pocket, got a dead sponsor, and I must have twisted off on Junior because she left. So I'm sitting in this apartment, and I've never had an apartment. I've never had an electric bill in my name, never had a water bill in my name, never had nothing in my name. And the people of the apartment complex come over and, you need to leave. We don't want you here. And I thought, well, maybe it's time I leave. Got me out of newspaper and find me a little place in Baycliff, Texas. If I had my badge on, I forgot it up in the room. He announced right off, you need to have your badge in here. And I thought, man, I done screwed up and left my badge up in the room. Worried about this stupid tie. Hey, Walter bought me this suit. Yeah, he did. That's right. He bought this suit for me about 5 years ago. I'd never had a suit before. Well, a couple of years ago, I live in a little town called Baycliff. I have a motorcycle shop there. It's called Iron Mike's. It's 2,000 people. Everybody knows each other. Well, I took the suit down to the local laundry with a little Chinese dude down there. And I said, look, man, I need to take my suit out.
What matter? I'm Mike Fat?
I said, look, man, just take my suit out. Be worrying about me. Have I got to the part where my story's in the big book? No. Let me tell you about that little incident. They come out with a fourth edition. You remember that? And they were sending their stories in. Well, I called Walter. I said, listen, Walter, people are sending their stories in. I think I'm going to send mine in. You know what he told me? I think that's a good idea. setting the hook on me. I thought, well, finally we're in agreement about something. He said, if they choose it, they can call it How It Will Never Work. Man, watch them. If you're new here, watch these old timers. Get away from them. Let's see here. Anyway, I'm sitting with a broke arm, a dead sponsor, a 6-month chip, and they're telling me I got to leave. So I get the newspaper out and I find a little home in Bay Cliff, Texas. The guy let me rent it. I don't know what happened. I figure it's a God deal. Today I look back and know it is. You know, that guy ended up giving me that house. I still live there today. It's my only address. Huh. Take that one. Love my home. I sit there and I think, God, I love my home. People tell me, well, it's in the hood. I don't care. I love my home. I do. Gangsters go real wide from my place. Hey, and we'll get to that in a minute. So I talked this guy into letting me get into this house. He goes to Africa on a 2-year job. I'm sitting in a house in Bay Cliff, Texas, and I'm working the iron. I got a job, got me a truck, not a new one, but it was a truck, got me some teeth. You know how we do, man. And here's the way it is. I wasn't going to drive 18 miles in Houston traffic to go to my regular meeting. I knew I had to find a meeting hall. By then, my mind had remarkably opened. I was paying attention, was doing a deal. Had picked me up another sponsor. Was doing what we do. Well, there was a meeting hall over there called the Creek Club. You're not going to find it in the GSO handbook. It's an outlaw club. I'd like to go over and tell them to shut it down. They're doing it wrong, but there's guys been in there for 50-something years. It seems to be working. Well, I'd heard about that club, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go there. 4 miles from my house. I leave Bay Cliff, and I go over this big bridge, the big Kima Bridge, if you ever get down there. God, it's beautiful. Sometimes today, it's not as much as I used to, but sometimes today I think, how in the world did God pick up a thing like me and give me a second chance? I better never forget the fact that I don't deserve it. That's for sure. Through God's grace alone, I'm up here. Through God's grace alone, any of us are here. Nobody's got a gun at that door. If you don't have a desire to stay sober, you could leave. We're all here because we have a desire. Through God's grace. Anyway, the meeting's at the bottom of the bridge, and you got to go over that bridge to get to the meeting. I got to the meeting hall, 6 o'clock meeting. I've been trained. You go to the meeting, you get your coffee, you do your business, you don't get up when the meeting starts. So I'm sitting there, 6 o'clock with my coffee, done did my business. Nothing. They're all standing around laughing, smoking, grabbing each other. 5 after, smoking, grabbing, laughing. 10 after, and I'm thinking, I'm going to die. 12 minutes after, they start the meeting, and they do it wrong. As soon as the meeting's over, I run to the payphone and call my new sponsor. And I told him the same thing I told you. I reported him. And he listened. That's what he told me. He said, are you through? I said, yes, sir. He said, I need you to listen very closely. I want you to make that same meeting for the next 90 days. I just slammed the phone down. Now, a couple of years before, I'd have cussed him out and threatened him, but my mind had remarkably opened. Year goes by, I'm going to that meeting every day. After 90 days, I got better. Saturday morning, I wake up and things are good. I'm doing a deal. I'm trying to work on a few people. I'm not quite working with people yet, but I'm working on a few. Going to meetings every day. I probably went to a meeting every day for 10 years. I chaired a meeting at the Wheelhouse, which is local detox, for 11 years. My first calendar 11 years. Walter told me, move on. Let somebody else do it, Mike. Give somebody else the privilege of chairing that meeting. Saturday morning, Purdy, going to a meeting at the creek. Get on top of the bridge. You better check yourself because the meeting hall is at the bottom of the bridge. See if my hair's combed. I'm looking good. Check my teeth. Forgot them at home. One year sober. About 4 years went by, and I got to thinking. What's Mike doing here hanging a bunch of old men? I've reached a plateau. They started a new meeting hall called the Bay Area Club. Bunch of pretty girls going there. And I thought I needed to relocate on a spiritual basis. So I told the old timers, they were in the half measures room. You know where that's at, where they're playing dominoes. Cutting you down. Give me some coffee. Shut up. Sit down. I gathered them around, let them know, hey, old Mike's reached a plateau here. I appreciate all the help you've given me, but I believe I'm going to move on. I went down to Walmart, got me a nice looking shirt. Went to the Bay Area Club. About halfway through the meeting, the chairman starts talking about predators, looking at me. Man, I run up there and hit him. Boom, in the meeting. Well, that wasn't a good thing to do. He took off to dial 911 on me. Everybody's going crazy. Well, I followed him. I was going to let him know, hey, just don't get hasty. I didn't really mean to hit you. Well, Walter and Big Al was there. And Al stopped me in the hallway. He said, leave. Got to keep it short with me when I'm in that way. I said, but you don't understand. He said, leave. So I left. When I was leaving, the cops were coming in, and him and Walter took care of it. Well, if you're new here, listen up. If Ed McMahon was going to come to my house and let me win the $10 million closing house, it'd take 6 months for everybody to find out in AA in Houston that I'd won. I drove straight back to the creek, walked in the half measures room, was going to let them know, hey, I might have made a hasty decision. Sit down and shut up. We've already heard. Now, the best I can figure was somebody telegraphed them. You know, it was a year before that God would allow me to make amends to him. But I finally did. We're not best of friends today, but we can pass each other. And, you know, that's a demoralizing act, hit somebody in the meeting hall, especially the chairman. The big book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about pitiful Incomprehensible demoralization. And I made up another word. That was a demoralizing act, run up and hit somebody amongst your peers. You're my lifeline here. You didn't kick me out. And I'd like to say that Alcoholics Anonymous has remoralized me. It ain't like that today. They didn't want me coming back over there for a while, and that's understandable. I go there today. We had a big blowout there last weekend. Big time blowout. Had old Mel B talking, was 60 years, out of Toledo, Ohio. They had a blowout over there. Let's rock on. 7 years sober. I'm doing a deal, going to meetings, participating, calling my sponsor. I'm out in the front yard talking to somebody, kind of, you know, throwing my arms around. And my bulldog, somebody gave me a bulldog. They said, I'm a biker, I need a bulldog. And I never had a dog before. You got to have a home to have a dog. And they gave me this dang old pit bull. And I'm out in the front yard throwing my hands around, and the pit bull bites me. Well, I'm in my cutoffs. And somebody had given me a gun. Said that I lived in the hood, I needed a gun. I've never shot a gun before. Never had a gun. If I ever had my hands on a gun, I didn't rob anybody with it. I'd go try to sell it for some wine. So I go run, get the gun, and shot at the dog in the front yard now. But I never shot a gun before, so I held it like you see on TV. Look here. That bulldog was looking at me. Didn't hit him. So I run back inside and call Walter. And I said, look, Walter, I'm in a bad way. That's what he said. He said, Mike, I can't help you right now. I'm across town. Kay's plumbing is broke. There's water everywhere. I said, Walter, shots have been fired. He said, I'm on my way. Here he come. When he come pulling up, I'm looking through the blinds. Dog's still in the front yard thinking, what's going on here? You know, I guess I tell you that to tell you this. Hey, I'm still sober, okay? Let's don't get too good too quick. Let's jump it up 3 weeks before my 10-year birthday. I'm coming home, and a truck driver cuts in front of me and cuts me off. And I started following to the quarry. Now, I'm 3 weeks from picking up a 10-year chip. And I'm telling myself, don't follow that man into the quarry, Mike. I follow him in. He gets out, I get out, and there's two of them. And he got too close to me and I hit him. Knocked him into his truck. Oh, went off on him. By then, I'm blowing steam, man. And I go home, and I call Walter. That's what happened. He's really laying the sponsor on me now, okay? Let's check this out. Normally, you call somebody and say, you just hit somebody. They say, what's wrong with you? He put over reverse psychology on me. You know what he did? He started chuckling. He said, he probably deserved it. And he followed up with this. Well, you ain't hit nobody about 6 months in a year, right? Because I was having some extracurricular activity in front of my house, the gangsters and stuff. I swear to God, this is the way I've always thought. I thought men were supposed to fight. I really did. That's the only thing I had left when I come to y'all. I had no way to communicate with you. That was my self-esteem right here in Old Rady. I could use it pretty good. And that's the way I gauged myself. And it was terrible. I jumped on Cindy. It was out of control. I was out of control. We got off the phone and I started crying. I couldn't stop crying. I started sobbing. And I got on my knees and I begged God to do something with me. Because I'd been trying to stop hitting people for a while. I could drag you through it, man. I'd worked the steps on it. How many times did I ask God to please let me stop hitting people? Wouldn't stop. Now, my character defect was real obvious. I believe we all got that one thing. Let me tell you what happened. 5 weeks later, I'm on a job running a crane. Midnight. We went to lunch, come back to go get back on the crane and go back to sleep. I mean to work. Slipped and fell off the side of the crane. Projected me off the side, tore both my shoulders off the hinges, busted old Rady in 50 spots. Doctor says the worst break you ever seen. Well, I believe God kicked me off that crane. You do whatever you want. And I'm okay with that. Walter says, God will give as big a stick as he needs, boy. Well, he sure tightened me up. Excuse me. Let me tell you what happened. I called Walter. Help me. He flew me in from Corpus back to Houston. He knew a nurse in the program. He called her. The nurse knew a doctor. And the nurse and Walter met me at the airport and took me to the hospital. I married that nurse. Yeah, that doctor's my best friend today. Do whatever you want with that. He operated on me 7 times. But let me tell you what happened to me. I'm laid up at home. And old Iron Mike ain't no more. I got an external fixator in my arm. I can't hit nobody. Period. It's over. I never used my left much. Didn't need to. I can't tell you how dark it got. It got real dark. I was thinking about jumping off a bridge. Something like that. Alcoholics Anonymous come to my rescue one more time. Started nursing me back. I'll tell you this much. First time I knew somebody needed a whooping, I couldn't give it to them was tough. I was up for 2 days. It's worse than if I'd have hit them. What this has forced me to do was to do things different. You know what? I ain't hit nobody in 6.5 years. And I ain't even thought about it. And nobody's gotten in a position for me to hit them. And I'm thinking, you know, the truth is, how in the world could I have been that wrong? Truth was, I was. I was that far off kilter. I believed that all the way into Alcoholics Anonymous, that I was a protector. I was supposed to fight. Can you imagine? And you good people, thank God you didn't kick me out. That was a bad act in my 4th year. That was bad. That spread like wildfire. It's like, I'm surprised it didn't make the Houston Chronicle. Them old timers wouldn't let me talk for a year, man. I tell them, shut up. Give me some coffee. I'm all busted up and I'm starting to heal. And I'm eyeballing the nurse. We're not dating or nothing. It took us 3 more years to start dating. My mama calls me. She said, your father's going in for surgery, Mike. And I want you, my baby boy, with me. Now, you got to understand, it's a long road. At one time, they had 5 years of presents and cards in a closet. My mama made my dad pack up and go to Houston on Congress Street to see if he could find me. Now, see, I wasn't hurting nobody. At least I thought I wasn't. Never stole from them. Broke their heart. Well, I went up there. My dad had all these surgeries. It was like 6 weeks. Got back down to Houston. And my sisters called me. They said, we don't care what happened, Mike. We want a brother back. You're not the same man that left all them years ago. Alcoholics Anonymous done that. Ain't nothing I read. It's something I did. It's the examples that I got right here in this room. Showed me how to be a good son, a good employee, a good member of society, a loving, caring man. Terry and I got married. Walter married us. He's a preacher. As long as he don't bury me, we'll be all right. Here's what I do. I get up in the morning and I invite God in. Most of the time, I get on my knees and invite Him in. Sometimes the mornings are tougher than others. Sometimes I can't quite get down there. I can't quite get up. But I'd say 99% of the time I do. And I don't think that opens up a channel with God. That's just some way that I humble myself. And I ask God to direct my thinking every morning. Ask Him to inspire my thinking every day. And I get that right out the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not something I made up. But not saying you can't make something up. That's just something I don't do. And then I invite Him into a let me help the man who was still sick. And I'll pray for some folks. And I believe it helps. I believe God answers prayers. Then I get up in the morning, get me some coffee, and read me a little something. It's not always out the big book. Sometimes it's out the Bible. And try to be quiet for a few minutes. Because the book tells me to do that. You know, I guess when God kicked me off the crane, maybe about 6 months later, I made a decision that I was going to join Alcoholics Anonymous and try to be a good member. And this is where my life was going to be. I wasn't going to question if I was ever alcoholic or drug addict or blooming idiot. I'm just going to say, Mike, you're an alcoholic. Let's move on. And things have really opened up. You know, people treat me different because I treat them different. It's mind-blowing. I'm telling you, it's absolutely mind-blowing. You know, my mom told me a couple of years ago, her and my dad were going to the bank, and they're old. He's 85 and she's 81. And she said they were in the car, and she said to him, can you believe that Michael has a home, a wife, a business, and goes to church and has a good life in society? And she said they just rode home in silence. We could call them up right now, put them on speed dial. Call them up, put them on speakerphone, and they'll tell you right out, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my boy's life. A guy's sponsor here is Mark. I call him Hillbilly because he's from Arkansas. That's what I tell him. I said, you know what? You seen them big storage tanks on the highway where they put all the gasoline and stuff? Well, when they go check them tanks, they do like a ping test on the side of the tank to see how thick it is in case any rust or anything. And I said, if they was to ping the normal head, it'd probably be a quarter inch, 3/8 thick skull. You go pinging on a hillbilly, you probably got you a 1/2 inch, 5/8, maybe a good solid inch up there. Well, I tell you what, Mark's sitting right here, and I'll tell you another thing. His mom and dad are with him. They're non-alcoholic. They got their boy back. Alcoholics Anonymous giving their boy back. That's Bart and Betty right there. Y'all stand up and say hi to everybody. That's Bart and Betty right there. That's right. What a deal. I had to pay their airfare and their motel for them to come up here, but still, no. I tell you what a nice place, huh? My goodness. If you get a chance, go in the cement pond where they got all the water pumping in there. It'll knock you out. That's what Walter said. That's going to knock you out, boy. I said, no, no, I won't sleep. He woke me up. Come on, man, get your suit on. Let's go. You know, my life's so full today, I have an opportunity to open up a bigger motorcycle shop. And I'm not scared. I just can't get my mind around it. It just ain't supposed to be that way. Thing like me ain't supposed to be up here talking. Ain't supposed to have a good life. That's what I was always told. Believe in a lie. If you're new here, I want to welcome you. I'm going to tell you something that's real important. God honors willingness. He honored mine. He'll honor yours. You heard my story, busting people upside the head. I'm not saying that's the way to go, but that's what happened. I sit up here happy, joyous, and free today. Ain't had to hit nobody in 6 years. Don't even want to. It's kind of hard to believe that one thing was blocking me off from the sunlight. That one thing. Because I'd worked the steps. I'd been helping others. I'd been carrying the message. Well, I guess I better wind down since I'm running out of things to say. I thank you for the honor and the privilege of coming up here and being your 70th Friday night speaker. Me and Terry were talking about that last night when we were watching TV. I stayed home with her and we watched a movie just so we could be together because we weren't going to be together this weekend. Y'all give me that. I never had that kind of love for anybody. And I'm not quite sure how that worked. I just know if you stick around here long enough, you work the steps, and you get a sponsor and do what the sponsor says, no matter how wacky it sounds, and go to meetings and try to help another alcoholic, your life's going to change. The big book says if I go back out and drink again, it's going to get worse. It will never get better. Well, here's Mike's take on it. You come into Alcoholics Anonymous and stay, your life gets better, never worse. I'm going to end it with the way my sponsor ends his talk. If you don't think Alcoholics Anonymous works, try it. And if you don't think God will help you, by God, ask Him. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.